No money shall be drawn from the treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law.
Greetings and welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, your guide to the legal intricacies behind the contract and fiscal laws that power the U.S. Army and the Department of Defense. I am Major Sarah Hickman.
And I am Major Daniel Franco. Together, we are your co-hosts.
On this episode of the Far and Beyond, we will talk with Mr. Adam Cottle about the temporary acquisition flexibilities relating to Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel.
Mr. Adam Cottle is an acquisitions attorney providing contract and fiscal law support to Program Executive Officer Soldier, Program Manager Expeditionary Energy and Sustainment Systems, and Program Manager Terrestrial Sensors. He also provides administrative, ethics, and labor legal support to various client activities.
Mr. Cottle, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Sir, as we say in the military, bottom line up front, why is it essential for our audience to understand the significance of these temporary acquisition flexibilities?
So the core mission of the DoD Acquisition Corps is to deliver to our warfighters what they need to fight and win when they need it. And if we can't do that, if it's the wrong stuff or it's late, we risk mission failure. And our senior leaders are always talking about the need to move at the speed of relevance in the 21st century. So what these temporary flexibilities allow us to do is to accelerate contract award and production delivery so we're able to meet those mission objectives. And we can do this by saving time on contract award. Anywhere from 1 to 3 years is the time savings we're seeing as we apply these. And so that's the bottom line here, is that this is a significant time saver that allows us to better support our warfighters.
Oh, that's great information, sir. You said 1 to 3 years. What's the normal timeline of any acquisition, generally speaking?
So a good rule of thumb from your starting point of, okay, we need to start figuring out what we need to the time contract is on award, 2 years is a good rule of thumb. For your more complex acquisitions, you could take upwards of 10 years. It is a significant amount of time that we can spend just trying to go through this process and may involve a variety of smaller contracts to try and help us narrow it down to what we're actually trying to get to. But at a minimum, 2, 3, 4 years sometimes.
Okay, so at a minimum, in some instances, 10 years. And then these flexibilities allowed for something that would take 10 years to reduce it to 1 to 2 years, if I understand correctly.
Quite possibly. And of course, it comes out, you know, the more information you have up front, the faster you go. And so if we've got something that is already there, where we're not starting completely from scratch, if we have, for example, a contract that's already been placed, or we have a clearly defined requirement, and it might take us from there to 2 years to get a contract award, we've done it in as little as 90 days.
Wow, that's impressive. Tell us more about these acquisition flexibilities.
Sure. So in the 2023 and 2024 National Defense Authorization Acts, Congress gave us certain authorities within DoD for what's called a covered contract or a covered agreement. And what that allows us to do is contracts that are either for building up the DoD stocks of certain materials called defense articles or critical munitions. And those are the kinds of things that we've often seen the president using his drawdown authority on to send to Ukraine, things like Patriot, Stingers, Javelins, body armor, tanks. There's a pretty lengthy list the State Department has available. We can use this to rebuild our stocks of those. We can also use it to support countries that have already supported Ukraine, Taiwan, or Israel, or we can use it to accelerate contract awards going directly to Ukraine, Taiwan, or Israel. So anything that falls in any one of these three buckets of contracts, it's a covered contract, and so Congress authorized us to use an exception to competition that instead of having to go out and to publicly advertise it, solicit it, go through an evaluation process, and then award using the evaluation criteria, we can simply use this exception with authorization and select the vendor or vendors that we want to award to and go skip that entire process and go straight to, here's a draft contract, give us your pricing, we want to award it to you really soon.
You mentioned the NDAA. For our listeners, what is the NDAA in relation to these authorities? Like, what is the purpose of the NDAA?
That's a great question. So the National Defense Authorization Act is an annual authorization act that Congress passes that basically spells out what DoD is supposed to be doing over the next 12 to 24, 36 months. It's been an annual bill going back, I think, 60, 70 years at this point. Congress does pass it every year. And Congress includes a lot of different trial programs in it, And in general, it's their way of directing how they want DOD to do certain things. In this case, and the 2023 National Defense Authorization Act, which was passed in December of 2022, because it's based on fiscal year, Congress said, hey, we understand DOD needs to benefit from certain flexibilities because the acquisition process is slow. And Congress recognized that. And that's one of those tools they use, is they say, okay, we're going to adjust it. Now, that's different than the Appropriations Act, which is how they fund us. The Authorization Act is kind of their details of this is how we want you to behave with the money we're going to give you.
One of the things you've talked about is competition. Can you explain for our listeners what is the importance of competition and what are the benefits that we receive from this authority with regards to competition?
So competition is one of the main tools we use to accomplish our three goals, which is we want stuff that's affordably priced, we want stuff that's good quality, and we want stuff that is delivered on time. You know, it says stuff, I guess you could say munitions and material might be a little bit better way of putting it. But we use that through competition as our main tool because if companies know they're having to compete for government contracts, they're going to tend to offer us the best deals. The risk we have whenever we don't use competition, for example, using this authority, is that that competitive pressure is then relieved if we don't use this carefully, and companies may feel that they can charge the government additional higher prices, perhaps not deliver it as quickly, perhaps not be the quality that we would otherwise expect. And so there are ways that we use this particularly I'm very fond of multiple award contracts that allow us to continue to use that competitive pressure, but in an accelerated award environment. So we still have to be able to put that pressure on companies that, no, if you want our business, you really do have to give us the best deal that's possible. So ultimately, we can be good stewards of the taxpayers' money, and we can ensure that our warfighters get the material and munitions they need to fight and win when they're asked to.
Thank you for clarifying that, sir. So in practice, what are these authorities intended to do?
In a word, speed. That is what this is about. This is about accelerating it and going from taking years to taking weeks and months to get things done. I mentioned a little bit earlier, our senior leaders like to talk about how we have to move at the speed of relevance in the 21st century, the speed of 21st century war. And that's what this is about, is allowing us to get on contract that much quicker by going through and not soliciting it and not advertising it and not going through that evaluation process. Because when we do, we want to ensure that we are following the rules when we're going through that full and open competition, very carefully following it to make sure there's no risk of bid protests, to make sure we're not having to redo our work, to go through and to make sure we are following the regulations that we have been provided with. What this authority allows us to do is to directly award contracts, to pick and say, this is the vendor we want to award this contract to, and these we don't have to go through some of the same lengthier justification and approval processes. It's been delegated to a fairly low level within DOD. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier as well, that allows us in some cases to go to contract award within 90 days or less, which is incredible that we've been able to. In one instance I worked on, it was almost a $1 billion contract. We got on contract in 90 days, which I think is it was a pretty proud moment for us because it was one of those contracts that we know made a big difference. Another thing it also does is it significantly reduces the risk of bid protests. For those folks who have worked in KLIP or some of the other, have worked on bid protests, those can cause some pretty significant delays to acquisitions as well. If you're before the GAO, it takes a minimum of 100 days to resolve usually. If you're before the Court of Federal Claims, 6 months to a year. You may have to redo work if the bid protest is sustained. What this does is, under the nature of the way it was set up, I can't say the risk is zero, but it significantly reduces the risk of bid protests, so we're able to move forward confidently and put things on contracts significantly faster to get stuff to our warfighters that they need to.
For the authorities that you're speaking of, where do they originate from?
It started off in the 2023 NDAA, which was passed in December of 2022. There was immediately what's called a class deviation. Class deviation is where it's a temporary change to FAR, and because FAR goes, the Federal Acquisition Regulations go through a notice and comment period, we use class deviations when it's going to be a temporary change on a limited basis. In this case, Congress initially said it expires 30 September 2024, and it was limited to just Ukraine and countries that supported Ukraine. Congress liked what the DoD did. So in the 2024 NDAA, they expanded the authorities, and they said instead of expiring on 30 September 2024, they're now going to expire on 30 September 2028. So they gave us four more years to use this authority. They expanded it to cover Taiwan and Israel as well, and, which was a great show that Congress agreed with the way that we had been using it and trusted us to continue to use this authority effectively to accomplish our national security objectives. And so shortly after that, in this previous January of 2024, there was another class deviation that was issued that superseded the previous class deviation with all the updates to it and all the explanatory interpretations of this is how DoD wants us to apply this in certain interpretations that the Secretary of Defense's office wanted to ensure that we were following.
Okay, so let me unpack this really quick. You mentioned the Federal Acquisition Regulation. What's the Federal Acquisition Regulation for our listeners, sir?
So the Federal Acquisition Regulation are the overriding regulatory scheme that all federal acquisitions follow when using appropriated funds. It's found in 48 Code of Federal Regulations, and all agencies have supplements to it. So it's a fairly exhaustive list of regulations. We have the Federal Acquisition Regulations, or FAR, that we follow. Within the Department of Defense has its own supplement to it. The Army has a supplement to that. So it's a, like I said, fairly lengthy and exhaustive list of regulations covering everything from how we have to solicit and request that advertisements, how we evaluate, how we manage and administer contracts, how we terminate contracts, how we pay contractors, what types of costs we can allow, how we handle government property, how we handle quality issues. It is intellectual property, small business, labor rates for construction contracts. There's a lot of regulations in there that we're having to follow. And Congress, using their authority under Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution, has set forth the rules for, you know, the administration of contracts. And that's what we execute on, is that mission Congress has given us. And they've established certain parameters, and we follow them to the best of our ability, ensure that we are executing on them properly. And so that way we are being both good stewards of the federal funds, which is always a high priority for us, is making sure we're getting the best deal, and the FAR is intended to help us do that, but also executing on the public policy objectives that Congress has outlined for us.
So basically, the guiding principles of the FAR are to be fair and transparent to our contractors and making sure that we're good stewards of appropriated funds.
Correct.
So class deviations are issued to provide flexibility to depart from the federal acquisition regulations and the defense acquisition regulation supplement. Is that correct?
That's correct. So a class deviation is when it applies to more than one contract. You can deviate from FAR on an individual basis, but a class deviation is whenever a senior agency official who's been authorized says, okay, all contracts that fit within this scope are allowed to deviate without requesting further authorization or authorization only to a certain level. They don't have to go up to the same level as before.
You mentioned briefly Taiwan, but can you expand on the class deviation in regards to Taiwan, Ukraine, and Israel?
Sure. So the United States has provided a significant amount of material munitions to Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel. Just in the past 30 months or so, I believe the U.S. has provided about $41, $42 billion worth, perhaps even a little bit more than that. And Congress just appropriated another $60 billion worth of money for munitions and material for Ukraine. And some examples of that are, we have provided to date a little over 2 million rounds of 155-millimeter ammunition. We provided over 10,000 javelins, over 2,000 Stinger anti-aircraft missiles. We provided a Patriot missile battery, over 100,000 sets of body armor. That all came out, well, most of it came out of existing DoD inventories. And so part of what we're doing is we're simply replenishing that. We are backfilling our inventory, so that way if DoD is called upon to fight a war, we ensure that our soldiers and our Marines and our airmen and our Navy personnel have the equipment they need to fight that war. That's a key part of this. But also, Congress has instructed us to continue to support Taiwan, Ukraine, and Israel. There was about $12 billion in the latest Appropriations Act for Israel. Taiwan and other countries in that area received about $8 billion worth of aid, and we are executing on those contracts as well. So these are congressionally directed appropriations that we are to award contracts for certain types of material and munitions in support of those countries.
What are some of the best practices with this authority?
So I mentioned earlier how whenever you if you don't use competition, you lose some of the competitive pressures that keep prices down, that get us the better deals. And so what we have found, some of the best practices are doing things like multiple award contracts, of awarding to as many vendors as we are able to, and then using what's called the fair opportunity process in FAR 16505 that allows us to do accelerated competitions on a delivery or task order basis. So we still have the competitive pressure, but we're able to get those base contracts awarded much sooner and able to get things on contract that much sooner. And so that's one of the best practices we have found. Also, keeping our market research current and FAR, it talks about you have to have market research, which is where we go out and we do engage with industry. We do industry days. We go to trade shows to ensure we understand what is available in the space that we're looking at, what kind of options are out there now or in the future. So keeping our market research current, so that way if somebody comes up with a better idea a year or two from now, we're watching for that and we can bring them in, and we're not locking ourselves into a 10-year contract with no ability to come up with a better solution. Because occasionally people do build a better mousetrap. Once in a while, someone does come up with something good, and there's a lot of innovation in the DoD space right now, and we want to posture ourselves so we're not getting locked into outdated or obsolete materiel, and that we're able to take advantage of private industry's R&D efforts and be able to use that and bring that into our acquisitions as well. So those are two of the best practices that we found. And just making sure that we are continuing to be good stewards of the public's money and to support our warfighters to the best of our ability.
Excellent. For our listeners, where they can learn more about these temporary authorities?
So unfortunately, this is pretty new. This has only been around for about 18 months now. So we start off, obviously, with the statute. There are the class deviations, the defense price and contracting office up at Secretary of Defense's level has some information on it, but also it's kind of phone a friend. So Army Materiel Command, where I'm from, has utilized this authority extensively, and so we're in the global, and so feel free to reach out to those of us who are working on this. We have a lot of folks in AMC who use this authority who are very familiar with it, and we're always happy to share our knowledge with our fellow practitioners in this space. We're all about one team and supporting our warfighters.
Can you explain the impact that you've seen this authority have and how it makes you feel to help the warfighter complete their mission?
So I'll briefly mention something. There was a contract we worked on that, without going into details, is literally going to save soldiers' lives, involving some new tech, and it was pretty cool. And it was the one I mentioned where we were able to do $1 billion in 90 days. And for me, it's very personally rewarding knowing that somebody's husband, mother, daughter, son is going to come home because of the work I did, because able to get that contract in place that much quicker meant someone's life is going to be saved. And that's very personally rewarding for me to know that it's literally a life-saving activity in this case. And that's why I do what I do. That's why I love what I do, is because I know I'm able to make a difference that way.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for your service. We sincerely appreciate the time you've taken to share your valuable insight with us. Until the next time, sir.
Thank you, sir, for inviting me.
Thank you for joining us today in this episode of The Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
We love to hear from our listeners. Please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. The information can be found in the show notes from today's episode.
The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General's Corps, the Department of the Army, or the Department of Defense.